This is about faith in the modern family, and how do we use that in terms of technology? Technology is an absolutely marvelous, wonderful thing. You and I did not grow up with technology per se. It did not really exist. So we are kind of the first set of parents that are now parenting kiddos who will never know a world without technology. They're never going to have jobs that don't involve technology to some degree. They are not going to be in schools that do not have technology involved in it. So kind of some things are changing, and what happens, how do you mix those two without losing the good part of no technology? When you actually push notifications, as he says in here, we're actually doorbells. You know, ding dong, come out and play, let's go outside. And now push notifications are, oh, somebody wants to play a game with me in another country. You know, so our world has just changed in terms of how we access it, in terms of what we look at it, in terms of how it affects our personal relationships. So those are kind of the things that we are going to walk through and talk about today. What if I were to ask you guys, I brought my basket. I told you guys to get out your phones. We're going to put all of our phones in my basket. I'm going to collect them for an hour. How many of you just had an increase in heart rate and increased blood pressure? She wants to take my phone for an hour? You're probably not going to look at it while you're in here, but it's the fact that you know it's there. You know you could. You feel connected. And even if it's in the same room with you, to physically know that someone took that from you causes anxiety. Our kids are the same way right now, and we have to teach them how to use technology and still be able to communicate and have a good family structure. So if your blood pressure and your heart rate just went up at the thought of having to turn over your phone, this might be a good thing for you as well. Let's see. The first part of this is called, what should I feed my time-starved kids? And you're thinking, I'm always with my kids. How are they starved for time? But what we need to do is, this is looking at your entire family. This is not just sitting there. This is looking at different angles of your family. So the first part is knowing what season you're in. You might be newly married. You may not have children yet. You may have infants. You may have young, lower elementary, upper elementary, high school. What season are you in? Each of those different stages in life are going to create different situations in your family. When you have upper elementary, early middle school, those kids want to go everywhere. They need to see every friend. They want to go here. They want to go there. And you're doing nothing but playing chauffeur or scheduling times for someone to be picked up and dropped off. When your kids start driving, that is another stage of life, because then you are excited they have a driver's license and also very fearful that they have a license. So each stage is important to know where you are in your life. And as you all move through life from infancy through elementary, middle school, college, you are going to change your family structure. You're not changing it. Let me rephrase that. You're going to tweak your family, okay? Because rules are going to be different. When a little one's sitting in a car seat like that, that's very different from a high schooler who has rules about what time is my curfew, when do I have to be home, when does my family eat together, what is our family traditions. So those are the things that we're talking about in this book, to be able for you as parents to have discussion and to know how to set boundaries for your family. Some of you may think, it's a little late, my kids are already in elementary, we're just going with what we've got and that kind of thing. It's never too late to start. Okay, so know what type of season you are in. Set a pace according to that. It's going to get faster as they get older, let me tell you. I have three boys, as Christine said. They are 19, 17, and 15. Almost 18 and almost 16 is what they keep reminding me. But I have a sophomore in high school, a senior in high school, and a sophomore in college. So we have been through a lot of phases. Not every phase that I'm going to go through, but a lot of phases in terms of being busy, wanting phones, wanting to be everywhere their friends are, watching what their other friends are doing. And now we've moved into college, which is a whole new world that I'm enjoying this year. because last year at least he was at Collin. This year he's moved on to a different school. And so letting him be in a different state, that's a whole new world. And so we're just learning, and our life is changing. So know where you are and plan accordingly. When your kids are younger, you're going to have a slightly slower pace in terms of activities, in terms of involvement, in terms of they're not as in as many sports and that type of thing. So just know where you are. Be content where you are. And when you think of your kids in terms of really 18 years, you know, and then they're off to college after they graduate high school and they're no longer fully living in your household, even though you're still paying for them, they're not fully living there. It does make a difference when you try and take that in terms of how old is my child now? How many Christmases do I have left with them? How many more Thanksgivings are they in my house? And that puts a different perspective, especially when you're in the middle of perhaps two-year-old tantrums or three-year-old, arguments because they have just turned on that section of brain that can argue, that can reason. And so now they're using different parts of their brain they've never had before. And you're thinking, would you just grow up? But as a mom who's almost grown up, don't ever say that. They'll grow up just too fast. Enjoy them when they're little because it happens way, way too fast. So just know where you are. Know and enjoy the time that you're in. The book talks about living life end to end versus and to and. Prior to technology, we automatically lived end to end. You got up, you started your day, you went to work. Dads would go to work, kids would go to school. There was an end time to school. There was an end time to work. Technology did not allow us to bring really our work home. You might have had to stay late, sometimes and do things, but everything had a starting point and an ending point. And you did things sequentially. Life was allowed to flow sequentially. And so because of that, it was pretty easy to say, when I'm at work, I'm going to work. When I'm at home, I'm going to be at home. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be present. I'm going to play with my kids. I'm going to participate in my family. We're all going to have stuff to do, and we're going to enjoy it. We got chores to do. We got errands to run, but we're all going to do all those things together. When technology came into our world, our jobs can easily be 24/7. Easily, not stopping. You can always answer an email, or you can always access, reply to a text, or you can check Facebook and Pinterest or anything that's out there. And so you really have to make a decision to, with technology and boundaries, go back to living end to end. You have to shut some things off within your house in order to have family time. So you have to make those choices to not answer those emails just because you can, because your phone, your computer is now in your office and it's accessible for you, or it's in your pocket as you're walking around the house or whatever. You may get a notice that somebody's notified you about a change on Facebook. It'll be there in 20 minutes when you're done talking with your kids. Learn when to answer those things. Learn when to push them back. If you're having family time, don't answer your phone because you just told your child that my phone's more important than you are. You just said, I love you, but excuse me, I'm answering this. This is more important. So learn to unplug for those 30 minutes you have family time, or an hour, or 30 minutes that you're eating dinner. The family dinner is so rare anymore and so vital to what that is. And as your kids grow, it will get harder and harder to make that happen. Because I've got Thursday night middle school football or Wednesday night, and then I had high school football on this night, and I mean, mine all play football. We had three games a week. It got crazy to have family dinners, and then you had practices, and you had this, and my husband travels. So to be able to make that all happen does require a calendar, and it's okay to use a calendar on your phone to schedule some time. Be intentional about the time that your family has. And that's really a lost art. It's kind of like, okay, everybody has to go to school, got to go to work, I got to go to this activity, I'm in this sport, and then we have ballet, we have music, we've got cheer practice, I've got football practice. I mean, it goes and goes and goes and goes. And all of a sudden, your week is gone, and you're like, we've done nothing but pass each other in the car and in the house. And we've lost opportunity. Because the thing is, Your kids are going to get what they need from you from someone. And you really would prefer that information coming from you, that guidance coming from you, that love coming from you. If they're not getting it at home, they're going to find it somewhere. Be intentional about spending that time with your kids to have open conversations. Let them be silly. Let them talk about the things they want to talk about, things that are troubling them. Let them ask you those questions that they're still processing in their mind. This situation occurred at school today, and I'm not really sure what I should have done differently, if anything, or why she got so angry with me. Give them time to talk about that. And if you don't schedule time to sit in and unplug and just relax, then those things are not going to happen. In our busy world, they will not happen. Okay? So really practice living life end to end. Allow when you walk in the house from work, walk in the house from work. I can't tell you the number of times my husband would walk in on the phone and I'll just look at him and go, and he walks back out to the truck and he sits in his truck until he's done with his phone conversation, because our house is our house and he needs to finish work there. If he's coming home a little bit late, that's fine. Come home late and ready to be in our house instead of coming home and shutting yourself in the office and being, you know, unavailable to us. Physically unavailable because you've shut yourself in the office. Emotionally unavailable to us. So he drives a lot. So his office is really his truck. He drives. He's the sales and he drives the area. So he'll walk in on the phone and I will just go back out until you're done. And he just turns around and goes back out. And then he comes in. He's like, hi. And I'm like, there we go. That's the way. Because then he's ready to engage in our world. We picked the kids up from school and they needed to tell everything that happened. They spent 7 hours in a classroom with other people on playground and they learned exciting stuff, and sometimes sad things happen and some great things happen. What happened at PE and I made this beautiful thing at art. They're so excited to tell you. And if you're doing this on the phone, I'll be right there. Hang on just a minute. What did you just tell them? In preschool, I see it every day and it breaks my heart, where moms have been gone for 5 hours and the kids have just, they're so happy about it, and they come and they're like, mama, guess what? And I cannot tell you how many times I see this. Mama, listen. Okay, baby, that's nice. What is that? Oh, that breaks my heart. What is it? Because she's so excited about her picture she drew. It's as clear as a bell to her what it is. And then mom says, what is it? In the midst of typing a text or scrolling on Pinterest. I'm like, really? Do you have to scroll Pinterest when you're picking up from school? Give her 20 minutes. Pinterest will be there when you get home and she's gone off to play somewhere. Pinterest will be there when she's in bed. It really will. It'll be there. So use your time wisely and be present with your children when they are there to be present with. As they get older, it'll be much harder to do that. So take advantage of the time that you have. Let's see. Living and has allowed us to kind of practice the skill of multitasking, because you're trying to drive your kids to school and talk on the phone and answer some emails without getting caught in the school zone and get there on time to try and get a head start on someone. So and just allows us to be layers of multitasking. That's very different from having a starting and a stopping point end to end. So what you're really doing when you are living in an and to and world of trying to do more, you don't have any more time in your day. You really have 24 hours that God gave us that will never change. That's never going to change. That's what he gave us in a day. And now we're trying to cram 26, 28 hours worth of work into a 24-hour day. You still have to sleep. You still have to go to work. You still have to go to school. And those times really haven't changed. What you're doing is in your in-between times with what should be family time, you are now layering that with work and family. And that's where technology, that little gap in there between school and work and going to bed, everybody having to sleep, that family time is now layered with paying attention to the kids, being on your phone, answering your emails, helping with homework, getting dinner, all of that. That is the and-to-and versus end to end. Does that make sense? It's when you read this, he explains it very well in there. It's just when I had to stop, it's one of those, I went back and read 3 or 4 times because I was like, you know what? I'm guilty. Raising my hand. I do that. And I read this last year and I have made a huge effort. I don't do Facebook, social media. I don't do any of that because I can't be misunderstood if I'm not on it. So if something big happens, I go the old-fashioned way and someone tells me about it. And so I just don't do that because I realized I was taking so much time from my boys in paying attention to them. I just said they're not worth it. So I'm off. I don't do social media. And that's just my choice. I'm not saying that any of you have to do that. And I'm not saying my choice is right over yours. Every one of these families represented in this room today are incredibly unique and different. And God created all of them. So what you guys do in your family and in your home has to be right for you. You can't imitate or do what someone else does. There's enough to keep up with the Joneses going on. We don't need any of that. Be who you are. Just make sure that you're being the best family that you can be to honor God. So what I do doesn't mean it has to be what you guys do. I don't want you to think my husband's on it, my boys are on it. I just chose not to be on it. So that's just a choice I've made, and that doesn't mean that it's right or wrong for you. It just means it was right for me, okay? But we're just have to be very, very cautious with the time that we have because God will not give us any more of that. That is the one commodity that man cannot reproduce. We cannot make time last longer, go slower, and we cannot get any more of it. So just be extremely cautious with what you're doing with your precious time. And with your time, when you start thinking of it in terms of choices, I'm limited with that. If you start looking in terms of making a good choice and a bad choice, that's easy. The hard part comes in when you're looking at it with a good choice and a better choice. That becomes hard because both of these are hard. Do I sign up to be on the board of the PTA at school? That's a great thing. It helps your kids. It helps the school. Those are wonderful things to do. Is it the best choice for my family right now in the season in which we live? That's what you have to put in perspective. Because good and bad, those are the easy decisions. We don't go and do that as a family. That's not where we live. That's not where God is directing us. We're going to, all the bad choices, done. You're left with good, better, and best. Those are the hard choices. Okay? So just because it's a good thing to do, sometimes you still have to say no. Because it may not be the best thing for you as a mom, for you as a dad, and for you as a family unit. So those are the harder decisions. Good and bad, those are easy. Good, better, and best for my family, those are the hard ones. Okay? And I can't give you the answer. He's not going to give you the answer in this book, but God will give you the answer in his book. And that's where you need to stop and you need to pray about it and you need to take time to look at it because those are the harder ones. There's a million different choices and a lot of them are fantastic options. Just make sure you're making the best one for your family at the season in which you live. And that could change as your family changes and grows. Just because you make a decision right now doesn't mean in 18 months that you can't alter your decision. Your family has changed in 18 months. Your next school year, you will be in a different situation. So you take advantage of all of those possibilities and details, and you make the best decision for that. I did PTA for a long time, and when I had my kids in there, it was right for me because we were just started a brand new school. But by the time my third one got in there, I had teachers, that three teachers I needed to talk with, and work on. I had football practice. I had a lot of other things. So when I had one child in PTA or in school and I was on PTA, that worked for me. When I had three kids in school and they asked me to be PTA, that didn't work as well for me. It might work for you guys, and that's great. And they need those people, but I just had to step back and say, no, thank you. I'm going to take a break. I'll help and I'll volunteer in any way I can at the activities, but that's something I had to learn to say no to. And that's kind of leading into our next thing is know your boundaries. Know meaning K-N-O-W, know your boundaries, know what you can do. Know that if you put, how many in here are really masterful at just saying yes and then being wishing you hadn't? Okay, everyone should probably raise their hand because at one point or another, you've agreed to do something you wish you hadn't agreed to do just because it was a friend. Just because you felt pressured, it was a boss at work. Just because you felt like you needed to because you hadn't done enough in the past or something. Whatever the reason are, there's 100 of them. But all of us at one point or another have agreed to do something we shouldn't have, but you felt committed to go on through and to do it because you said that you would. You wanted to see it to the end. Know where your boundaries are and practice saying no. Two little words. And it's so hard to say two little letters in that one little word. No, thank you. I don't think that's a good time for me right now. And it takes some practice. It takes some courage to say that. No, thank you. I don't think I want to take on that extra responsibility at work. That's not a good time for my family. Or if I do this, I'm going to have to give up this. You know, you negotiate. You look and see if I'm going to take on this part, then I'm going to give up this. Because you have boundaries. You can only do so much. So in every aspect of our life, we have to just look. So know your boundaries and practice saying no. It's not an ugly word. It's not a bad word. It's not anything. It just means that right now, it's not the best time for you. And just tell people that. If you just say, no, I don't like that, or no, I don't want to do that, with no following sentence, if you just say, no, that's not really a good thing for my family right now, people are like, oh, okay. Because family was first, and it should be. They're very, very, accept that much better than just, no. You know, if you just get told flippantly no, you're like, well, that was rude, you know? But if you're like, no, that's not a good thing for my family right now, people are like, oh, okay, I understand. And guess what? I had to learn, and I had to practice it 3 or 4 times, and every time when I said no, someone else said yes. It was fabulous. I realized that someone else needed that opportunity. I gave up my position on the board of PTA. Someone was thrilled to have it. There you go. Help out. Here's everything I've done. And you just give that to them. When you say no, God has someone else ready to say yes. So let them use the gifts that He's given them. They're in a different season of life. Let them use those skills. So when you're sitting there putting stress on yourself and got too much on your plate and you're like, oh, I shouldn't have done this, and blah, 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 and you're not doing it with a happy heart and it's causing stress and friction in your family, that person that was meant to do it is like, oh, I really wish I could be involved in that. So when you say no, God has someone else who is willing to say yes. Let them do it. It's their turn. Doesn't mean you can't go back and do it later. Just be willing to know it's not the best thing for my family right now. Some things that as parents you guys need to talk about. How many sports per child will you allow your children to participate in? There's no right answer. There's no wrong answer. It's what works for you. How many activities outside of sports? Dance, music lessons, Cuman reading. I mean, even to attend reading or math, Spanish schoolhouse after school. How many different activities do you allow your child to go into? That's up to you. That's individual. That's based on the child. That's based on your family, on how many places you want to go. All of that. And again, that's just stuff that as mom and dad, you guys got to sit down and figure that out. And it's much easier if you sit down and have a discussion and you two are on the same page before you go have your discussion with your kids or before they grow into that age that you have to have a discussion. You can play sports, but we play one sport at a time. So if you want to play football in the fall and then you want to run track in the winter and then your basketball in the winter and then run track in the spring, that's one sport at a time. There's a starting and a stopping point to each of those, but we did one sport at a time. That's what we did because I had 3 kids. That was pretty much what I could handle was one sport because then mom is running 3 sports. So that's what they chose to do. And they could choose 3 things, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, whatever they want to be involved in, choir, anything like that. But you had to choose what worked for us. And y'all will have to have discussion what works for you because the more you add, the less family time you have, the less communication you have. How many times do you guys eat dinner together as a family? How many times do you want to eat dinner together as a family? With, you know, perhaps dads, perhaps with your work schedule, that might be very challenging to do 5 to 7 nights a week. You might be a Monday through Thursday traveler. And so Friday, Saturday, and Sunday will be vital times for you guys to have family dinners together if you're gone with your job. And there's restrictions to jobs and, you know, things that you have to do. And you have to take that into account when you're planning what works for your family. My husband was gone for the first 15 years, probably 4 nights a week. So what we did was we really focused on the nights that he was in town. And there still were, there was 100 different pulls. Oh, I got to go see this customer. I got to go. No. Do you really have to? Can't that wait until a phone call on Monday? I mean, because they just feel the pull of work. I have to do this to be more successful, to get ahead. And you guys really just, and that's hard, man. I'm not even going to lie. It's very challenging for you guys. But together as husband and wife, mom and dad, you guys need to come together and figure out how many times per week do we want to sit together at a table. Maybe it's not at home. Maybe it's out at a meal, and that's okay, because that's how you guys could get together. You didn't have time in your day to cook, but you're sitting at a table discussing and talking. Make it a goal and take your calendar and record it. Put it down, because we make our appointments that are in our calendars. We make our meetings. We make our calls. We are at the right place. We're at pickup time, drop-off time, sports times. We're where we need to be if it's in our calendar. Schedule dinner. That sounds silly, but schedule dinner to be in your calendars so that you don't forget it, that you don't let something else slip up upon it. Because if you've got Tuesday night free right now, if you don't block that out with dinner with your family, I'll promise you two or three things will pop up and want to be on Tuesday night. And you can say, oh, nope, I'm having dinner with my family. I'm sorry. No, I can't do that one. I'll catch you guys on the next meeting, or I'll catch the next one. I've got something already blocked on Tuesday night. If you want to, tell them what it is. If you don't, that's fine. They don't need to know what's on your calendar. But it's on your calendar, and therefore something else can't replace your family time, okay? So just use your calendars as best as you can. Even the little things like a dinner or time to talk or time to be together. And simplify. Simply simplify is the next one. Simplify your life as much as possible. Screen your calls. You know, when you get a phone call and you see it, you can go, that one can wait. Or if it's, you've got a family member who's ill and you're getting a phone call that could be regarding that, hang on just a minute, I really want to take this and just make sure that person's okay. And you take that call and then you come right back and, you know, explain. But screen your calls. They pop up on their screen. You don't have to say hello anymore from the landline because you don't know who's calling you. You know exactly who's calling you. And if it can wait until dinner time is over, if it can wait until family time is finished, take advantage of that. Just because it rings or beeps or vibrates or sings a song or whatever your phone does, it doesn't mean it has to be answered right then. Learn to push it back. And I know that sounds silly, but some of you will have a very hard time with that. It rang. I've got to see who it is. It might be, oh, what is it? Who's calling me? Who's texting me? Something has happened and I need to know. Practice letting it go. Just let it go. Okay? It'll still show up on your phone. It doesn't go away like, you know, Snapchat or whatever. It's gone in 5 seconds. So just, it'll be there when you have time to go answer it. And I know that sounds, these things, some of them sound very preschoolish and very elementary, but we have become so accustomed to technology running our lives that we really just need to take time. And he wrote this book to say, back off. Let's go old school. I'll answer my phone when I need to answer my phone, but I'm going to have family time. I'm going to unplug myself. I'm going to give myself a few minutes to just be dad, to just be mom, to just be husband and wife and have a conversation without ding. And then having, wait just a minute. Oh, then you answer something. You just lost that momentum of that conversation. And time between husbands and wives is so limited because you guys are always doing for the kids that to have that time to talk is very vital, because God gave you your marriage before he gave you your kids, and you need to keep that in order. Okay, so you need to make sure that you're spending time with each other in this crazy world. And sometimes it might be through texting to update calendars and stuff, but you need to have that face-to-face conversation. Hear what they're saying. Hear the emotion, not just reading a text. Okay. Your family's boundaries, they need to be very individual to your family. Your family is very unique and no one else in the world is like you. And so you need to have, boundaries that are set up for your family. They need to be identifiable. Everyone needs to know where to go look for the boundaries that you have put in place? Are they written on a board on the refrigerator? Are they on a computer screen? Are they where can they go find those? Maybe in their notes, maybe posted in the kids' room, wherever you want them to be, and they need to be very intentional. As a family, you've sat down and come up with these. If your kids are too young to be participating in those decisions, then as mom and dad, you have come up with them, and you're raising them up. If you're starting with your kids or older, get your kids involved in the decision-making process. Let them be part of that. The more they're a part of, the more they're going to be on board with it. They're not just getting told a whole bunch of rules. So let them participate in what your family boundaries are. Screening your calls, turning your cell phone off, put it on, turn it off. It still vibrates, even if it's on silent, and you're still hearing it. And then you're like, oh, there's one. Oh, gosh. Oh, my goodness. That might be five now that I'm sitting here having dinner and my phone's rang five times. Just shut it off. Put it in a different room that you can't even hear it. Hide it under a pillow of the couch and eat in the kitchen. Whatever it is that you can't even hear it vibrating so that you can physically and emotionally be there for your family members. And that's hard. So many parents are like, well, I'm with them all day long. You're physically standing next to them, but you're not always physically with them because too much of this is going on. That is not being with your child. That is not being with your child. That is physically standing next to your child. And there's a huge difference between being physically next to your child and emotionally being with your child. And we need to get back to being emotionally with our kids, okay? I know it sounds like I'm slamming this. I'm not. It is an amazing thing, this technology. Our kids use it. Mine use it every day. In high school, they just bring their phones and teachers like, get your phones out. And they use it pretty much in every class every day. It's just the world in which they're going to live. So technology is not bad. It's not evil. We need to learn how to use it with boundaries in our home, and we need to learn how to teach our kids to use it for good. Okay? So this may sound like I'm bashing technology, and I'm not. It is amazing to keep us connected. I have a sister that lives in London. I can text her. That's incredible. I can text back and forth with her in London, and she just, boom, she can fire it back when time change, you know, she's 6 hours ahead, and she can send stuff back to me, and we can communicate, and she's living half, you know, across the pond, as they say, and so otherwise we wouldn't see them, or it would be a long time to get a letter and a postcard there. So just to be able to have the ability to communicate is amazing. I'm not bashing technology. I'm just saying use it within the boundaries and keep it right for your family, okay? Let's see. Let calls go to voicemail when you've screened it and you're like, okay, that one can wait. Just let it go to voicemail. Don't even pick it up and answer them. I'll talk to you later. Just let it go to voicemail. Stop answering. These are some ideas and ways to, he lists as just being able to let go and to simplify your life. Answer emails twice a day. That might be really, really hard for you at work. At work, you can answer emails all day, but and he's kind of saying when you're at home with your family, so like maybe Saturdays, if your world still rolls on, if your work still rolls in on Saturday and Sunday, pick a time that you're going to do it. Maybe before the kids get up in the morning, or maybe, you know, late in the afternoon, or when they're having a nap, or after they've gone to bed. Just pick some times to be able to answer emails if your work needs to still happen when you're not here. Moms, if you're home all day as stay-at-home moms, or you're home with the kids most of the time, you're not answering that email every time it dings. You're working with your kiddos. You're there with them. You're enjoying them. And then you go at certain times and answer your email. Just because it rings doesn't mean we have to answer immediately. We've kind of been trained. If we hear our ring, our call, our ping, our noise, whatever, that we have to answer it immediately. And we don't. It's still going to be there. So just remind yourself of that. A lot of things he says in here is less is more, which is so very true. Less talking is more effective. Listening is always better. Let your kids talk. Let them tell you what they're thinking, what they're feeling, because you're going to hear, okay, steps 1, 2, and 3, we're spot on. Uh-oh, we had a mishap in understanding step 4 and 5 of this process. Let them talk to you and you listen, because you can figure out where they are correctly and where the problem, where the breakdown is. And then you can address that. So less talking from you, because if you're talking just too much as a parent, you end up becoming Charlie Brown's mama. Wah, wah, wah. They don't hear anything you're saying. And so by listening to them and then with open-ended questions, well, what do you think about that? How did that make you feel? What would you have done differently? You know, those types of questions where you're just questioning back, they're still talking. You're getting them to think. You're giving your kids higher level thinking skills. And that's so very, very important. So less talking on our behalf, more listening on the parent side. And with each other, take time to listen to each other and to, you know, to talk that way. Not one always has to be talking and one spouse's, it shouldn't be that. It's a partnership. That means equal. So listen and talk equally in that marriage relationship, but listen more than you talk in the parent-child relationship, okay? And get less interruptions in family time, and you'll have more quality time spent together. Plan moments of rest. I know that I thought that was a little bit odd, but when I started reading it and thinking about it, I was like, you know what, that's good, because we are so busy. And by the time you finally get to lay your head on your pillow at night, you're like, oh my gosh, I don't think I could have done one more thing today, but I have five on my list. And so you feel like I'm starting at a deficit for tomorrow because I have to finish my list from today starting tomorrow morning. So plan times of rest. You become more, become better at being able to handle stress. You become better at being able to handle situations in your day. You become more productive when you have time to rest. Our bodies were designed to rest. And when we lived end to end, we had natural boundaries. We could rest. Now that we're living end to end, we really never get that mental and emotional time to rest. So schedule that with your family just to have unplugged quality downtime together. Okay. When you shift our thinking about resting from work and life balance, I said earlier, switch it to time life. You got 24 hours in every given day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. What are you going to do with that? You got your kids for 18 years before they go to college. What are you going to do with that? And then they'll come back for breaks and that kind of thing, and then they're gone. So what do you do during those times, during those 24-hour periods, during those weeks, during those years? How are you going to use that time to your best advantage? When you think of terms of time and life, it forces us to prioritize. It forces you to put in effect the things that you want to do the most, because you only have 24 hours. You can't buy anymore. You can't earn anymore. You can't do anything. You got 24 hours. What do I want to do with my 24 hours today? Living life to its fullest. Too much of a good thing. Even though it's good, too much is too much. Everything needs to be in moderation. Like I said, you may join the PTA or be the team mom for your sports team, or you may sign up and volunteer at church or at your kid's school. Is it the best thing for your family to do all those? Even though each one of them individually is a great thing, is it the best thing for me to take on a new activity if it's going to be to the detriment of my family? Because I'm gone one more night, or I'm not there, or it interferes with our scheduled dinner time or our family time that we have for that week. So too much of a good thing is still too much. So just like I said earlier, take time to make the choice between better and best, and that's where you guys have to come in and individually figure out what's going to work for you and your families. Okay? Make the choice for healthy and not hectic lives. A healthy life allows you to rest. It allows you to enjoy. It allows you to get done what God needs you to get done each day. And if you add too much stuff, your world becomes hectic. You become frantic. You can't figure out whether you're coming or going. Just take time to lead a healthy life and not a hectic life. He has five steps to planning moments of rest. Schedule it, which we talked about. Say no. Which we had talked about. Plan ahead. Schedule that time of rest with your family. Are y'all going to sit on the couch and stare at each other? That's no fun for the kids. They're not going to be excited about the next rest time that you have with your family or your family time. So are you going to go outside and you're going to go to the park? Are you going to go to the dog park? Are you going to play? You got some brand new puzzles y'all are going to put together if you like doing puzzles. Do you have a new board game that you want to try? Your kids are older. You want to try, maybe y'all like cooking. So you're going to try a new recipe and the whole family's going to cook a new thing together, a new meal together. This week, whatever it is that your family loves, you love to golf or you're swimmers or whatever it is, you're going to plan a new bike route that you're going to go on. Whatever it is that you like to do as a family, plan that during your time of rest. Don't just go, I don't know what we're going to do. Do you know what we're going to do? I don't know. Well, we better figure it out because we got 30 minutes and then your time is gone. So make sure that you have that pre-planned and so that your time is effective and in quality time. And don't worry. Let the simple stuff go. The Bible tells us not to worry. If we can't gain one thing by worrying, why are we wasting our time doing it? And worrying is the paralysis of faith. You're taking God's job away from him when you're worrying about something. You're telling him he's not qualified to do it. You're taking that on for him. That's all kinds of wrong. You don't want to take on God's job. So just quit worrying about not getting stuff done or worrying about what's going to happen. Just don't sweat the small stuff. Just let it go, okay? But when you have scheduled things, you have learned to say no to the things that are bad or even the things that are good because you've made the best choice for your family. Don't worry about saying no to that. That event's going to happen. Somebody else has stepped in to say yes, and it's all going to be okay. Those are kind of feelings you have to practice getting used to, because if you're someone who says yes, yes, yes all the time, and then when you practice saying no, you're going to feel stressed, you're going to feel anxious, and you're going to worry about, did it happen the way I would do it? Did it happen the way... Doesn't matter if it happens the way you would do it, because you're not doing it. Someone else is doing it, so let it happen the way they've planned it. So it's not on your worry plate anymore. And then work smarter, not harder. Again, just because we can do something doesn't mean that we should do something. You can join everything, and the city of Frisco has a million and one things to participate in. Pick what works for you. Just because our phone dings and rings doesn't mean you have to answer it. Wait until the appropriate time. So work smarter and not harder. Okay? Schedule uninterrupted time together. That clock has been at 9 o'clock since we got here, so I want to make sure we have time to have questions at the end. Schedule uninterrupted time together. That's what we talked about, making that time. Everybody put your phone down. I mean, there's 5 phones in my house, and sometimes I'm just like, put them down. I just want to see your eyes. I don't want to see the top of your head because you're doing this. I want to see your eyeballs. Go put your phones up and let's come talk. And sometimes they'll sneak in their pocket or they'll pull them out during dinner. I'm like, oh, it comes out at dinner. That one's mine. So then I get to take it for just a little while. Well, we finish dinner and I put it in the drawer so they can't even hear it. And we finish dinner and that kind of thing when we schedule our time together. So you have to make an effort to do these things. The different types of parents that are he discusses in the book are watching life happen. Those who just sit back and watch things happen, they're just very laid back, very easygoing, don't want to be aggressive, don't want to make changes, just going to roll with what goes on. Some of them let life happen. No attempts to move forward. They're content where they are. And they're just happy to be right there where they are, and that's a great thing. And then some of them make life happen, being assertive but not aggressive. There's a difference. And being cautious but not obsessive, and making sure that you're doing what you need to for your family, and you made that plan for your quality family time. You know you're going to play a new board game, so you're making that happen. One of those is not good. We need to be all three, okay? There's different parts, and he talks about it in here. You need to be all three types of parents at different times of your parenting life, at different times and different situations with each of your children. You need to watch what they do. You need to watch what your children say and see how they handle themselves. Then you can go in and kindly and constructively have a discussion and make changes and talk to them about that probably wasn't your best decision. Let's talk about that. How do you think that person felt when you said this during the soccer game today? How do you think that made her feel when you made that comment today about her work at school? Or she didn't, what you felt she didn't do enough for the group project and you made a snide comment. So, you know, you go in and you talk about that. So you need to sit back and you need to watch a little bit of how your kids are operating, and then you kind of be content where you guys are in terms of your life together and your quality time together, and then you need to go in and you also need to make corrections. So as a parent, you do all three things. He describes it very well in here. Anyone who's ever picked up a child at a pickup line at school, and you see those 10,000 cars in the pickup line, you see all three types of these parents. Those who aren't going to inch forward, those who are aggressive and really are not abiding by that 20-mile-an-hour speed limit, and you see all the different types. But we need to be all three types of parents to our kids at different times and for different situations. Again, he talks about uninterrupted time. Plan it. Put it on your calendar and make sure it is unplugged time. Phones are down. Phones are gone. Computers are off. TV is off. Everything. You will never totally unplug in our world unless you are in a non-cell service camping or something and you can't get it. And he doesn't talk in the book about totally unplugging and not using it. Use it and do, if you guys want to have family time, some of those geocache things are fantastic events to go to where, you know, you sign up and you go hunt for different things that people have left. You have to use a technology to do that. But it's using it in a boundary and the whole family is together. You don't have three kids in different rooms, you know, on their phones, texting their friends, and you're watching TV, and that's all that happens every single night. So technology can even be used in your family time if you're doing it together as a family, if you're going to go geocaching or you're going to go, you know, treasure hunting and that kind of thing. Or maybe your kids want to go somewhere that they've heard about in school and you guys make a little weekend trip for something. Well, they're going to get them to do the research on it. Where should we go? How long will it take us to get there? What time should we leave? They're going to have to use technology to figure all those things out. So it's not a negative thing. Just put it in the right perspective and in the right usage. Okay? Questions on that part? That's part one. I know there's four parts of the book. The fourth one is really kind of the homework part for you guys and learning how to make family rules and that kind of thing, and setting family vision statements, mission statements, all of that. And that's really something that you guys can read and can work on. So we're not really going to go over that part of it today because that's really homework that you guys can do. And each of you are going to have a different answer for that because your families are unique. And so it's really part one and part two are the biggest kind of, oh my, kind of parts of the book. Questions on that before we hit, what do I do when my kids are rude? Anything? If you think of it, then you can ask me later. We'll have questions at the end, so write it down. Otherwise, we'll move on through part two. What should I do when my kids are rude? Technology has, physically it's altering our necks, our kids' necks, because when you see a picture of a spine, you know, it comes down from the back of the head and should go this way into the spine, and because they're spending so much time like this, we are really reconstructing the physicality of our spines, and doctors are seeing eye problems and neck problems in young children that they don't normally see until the 60s, age 60 and up, and they're seeing it in 12 to 18-year-old kids because so much of this. So a 20-20-20 rule, every 20 minutes you need to look up for 20 seconds and at least 20 yards. Just give them that because your eyes need to focus on a distance, not right here, and your head needs that rest. So 20-20-20, get for yourself, if you're on a computer, if you're on a phone all the time, and for your kids, just get them to pick their heads up and get that so that your spine doesn't begin to reconstruct itself. And a lot of times because kids feel powerful sitting behind a phone and saying, typing things they would never say to a person, we have, number one, that's a problem. And number two, a lot of our kids have actually lost the art of communication. To be able to stare someone in the face, look them eye to eye, and have a conversation with them, they talk in the terms that they text. You get these little short 144 character sentences, and that's how they communicate to you anymore. I have some of the high schoolers that come over to my house when kids are over, they'll sit and they'll like, yep, yeah, and I'm like, let's put my hand on their phone and put your hand on their chin. You can talk to me. And, you know, just get them to look you in the eye, and they're never told to do that. You get a response from texting it, or you get a response from, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm like, that's not a word. That's a phrase. It's the word yes. It has an S on the end. We say yes in my house. And so just to get some kids to actually have a conversation with you. Think about it. If they can't have a conversation, how are they going to go have a job interview? I mean, you think these are really simple things and skills that really don't need to be, but when they become adults, how are they going to go get a job if they cannot have the skill to talk to an interviewer and go have a job interview and be able to talk to their coworkers? I mean, you've really got to focus on the long-term goal of they're going to be adults one day and they need to function in the world, and communication is a vital part of that. in terms of being able to write and to be able to type, yes. But there is always going to be that need for face-to-face conversation in a variety of ways. And if they don't learn how to communicate face-to-face as a child, how will they be able to communicate when they become the parent with your grandchildren? They will not know how if they don't learn it now. So you've got to take that time to teach them, okay? And you have to model the behavior. If kids are being rude, they really are, first of all, age 15 and boys is a challenge. Not even, that's just something happens at age 15. They do come back around at age 16. But age 15, and I've heard it's age about 14 for girls, is a tough year. I only have boys, so I don't know. There is part of rudeness just because they think they're cool. They think they know everything. We had it in eighth grade because I'm the oldest in school, and therefore I'm cool. And I'm like, yeah, but you still have rules and chores, so guess what? We're going home to do those. And then when they're sophomores, oh, I'm getting my license. I can now drive. I'm that cool. I can do all this. And we had a little attitude adjustment at age 15 as well. So part of being rude is maybe perhaps the age that they might be in, and it's age appropriate to some extent, not excused because they're that old, but age appropriate, and that's where you go in and you use that as teachable moments. But if your children are rude, they don't give proper answers, they don't give proper, you know, communication, you aren't going to change them by yelling at them. You're not going to change them by barking at them. Do this, do this. The only thing you can do is be responsible for yourself, and you're going to model the behavior that you want them to have. When kids learn, they learn from what they see. Okay, they just do. You see, kids, most of everything that kids will learn, they're going to learn because they are, they see it, they take it in, and they imitate. They're little sponges. They take it all in. You watch your little toddlers, they'll do something, and, you know, you're like, oh, that is just like your daddy. You got that from your daddy. Or you may see something, and you may go, mom will go, I don't understand where she gets that. And dad's like, look in the mirror. I mean, you do the same thing you do every day. Yeah, the smart husband says that. You're right. But, you know, that kind of stuff, kids imitate what they see. So if you're seeing a behavior that you really don't like, that is, if it isn't shown, if you've really analyzed and it's not shown in your home, then it's being caused somewhere or coming from a friend or something, and you need to figure out the source of that behavior. But you first need to look in your home. Is that being role modeled unintentionally? Do mom and dad speak to each other that way? So siblings are speaking to each other that way? Do parents speak to children that way? And so children are speaking back to parents that way. What is happening that's causing that behavior? Because actions, tone of voice, words, all of that are caught more than taught. They're caught because they watch it. They catch it because they see it. They emulate it. They repeat it. You may have them imitating behavior from the cool kid at school, the popular kid at school, or perhaps a teacher or a coach that you're thinking, I need to go have a discussion because they love that class, and maybe, or that coach, and a word is coming home that you don't like, or phrases or attitude, and you're like, I see that on the field or on the court, and maybe I need to have a discussion with that coach about that, or even with your child. That look, you look like you're imitating, or you talk a lot about so-and-so. Have that discussion, just give them, so that they may not even realize that they're doing it, but you've opened that line of communication. But most of the time, you aren't going to change what you want by telling a child to change it. You're going to have to change it in yourself. You're going to have to even more over the top give them the behavior that you want them to role model or to emulate, okay? You may have to just ear-to-ear smile. Oh, thank you, darling. Thank you so much for doing that for me. You may have to be over the top. They're going to catch on, and they're going to start imitating what they see at home. So just understand that if you're just sitting there talking and telling them what to do, the old phrase, actions speak louder than words. Don't talk about what you want them to do. Do what you want them to do, because that's how they're going to learn. Okay? And teaching values in your kids is not something that you just set aside a 30-minute session for when they're 2.5 years old and say, this is what you're going to do. Values are taught from the moment that they're born, all their life. And you have to teach healthy ones. By the time a child is 3 years old, they have a vision in their head and an understanding in their heart that is very difficult to change of what a family is, of what role a mom and dad play, of the relationship of a mom and dad together, of the role of what a child is in that home. By three, they've only been talking for maybe 12 months. So the first 2 years of life, when they're not even talking, they've already set what is going to be their value system. They didn't hear you have a discussion. Y'all didn't sit down and have a major discussion about that. They learned it by watching. They caught what was important in your home. So teach those values and that kind of thing, okay? The areas of worth modeling to your children are managing your time. How do you manage your time? What do you do with it? Do you run frantic? Do you have a healthy lifestyle? Do you keep things to in perspective and priority? Do you spend more time on your devices than you do with people? Those are just questions to just ask yourself. How am I managing my time? Am I teaching time management the best I can to my children? Open up your heart. Model those manners. Model volunteering and caring and empathy. Empathy is not something a child is born with. Absolutely not. That is something that is caught by watching it happen in their home, by watching how to care for others, by how to truly apologize to someone. Those things are not innate. God did not give us that. That is something that has to be a learned behavior. So you need to role model that in your home. Date your family. Does your family have fun when they're together? Does your family enjoy the time they spend together? If you have this thing and everybody's fighting and nobody gets along because you don't have communication and you haven't talked, that's not fun. Kids are going to be like, that's a forced family event. And that's not fun. You want it to be a fun family event. So have those lines of communication open about anything. And they're going to be topics as parents you don't want to discuss. Trust me. You're like, oh, I thought you'd at least be an adult before we could talk about that. It comes sooner and sooner than you expect it to. But be open to accept those conversations, because if they're coming to you, they're going to get the right answer. Or they're going to go find it from a friend, and that'll be the wrong answer. So be prepared to answer those hard topics, okay? Even if they're like, your heart stops and you got this knot in your stomach, answer those tough questions. Open those hard discussions. It's so important. Encourage your family by modeling self-control in tough situations. Do you flip out? Do you go into freak-out mode when something goes wrong, when your calendar isn't directly on schedule, when something happens or someone changes their mind? How do you handle a tough situation when someone gets ill in your family, when someone's hurt your feelings? A friend, another adult, posted something on Facebook and that hurt your feelings. What do you do? How do you show self-control to your children by role modeling that to them when something in your world did not go right? Okay? That's how they're going to learn how to do that. Learn from difficulty. Find the joy that God can give you in the difficult times. When we admit that we're weak, that's when God is waiting. He's waiting for us to say, I need you. You probably tried it on your own. I do that all the time. I'm going to try this one. I think I can handle this one from my last situation. And then I'm like, oh, nope, I can't do that one either. So then you have to go, okay, God, I'm ready. Please come and show me how to do this. Please help me with this. This is harder than what I can handle. I need you to guide me through this. So be willing to be weak and show that to your kids. God's got to help us through all of this. I screw this up every single day. I don't want you guys to think that I'm in any way perfect, because this is figuring it out every single day. But this is one thing that I really struggle is reminding myself daily that not to worry, God's got this, and I need to just let him take over from the beginning, not halfway through when I've screwed it up. And learning from the difficult times, one of the kind of the goals of parenting he has in here, I liked how he wrote this, was how to be, we listen, learn, watch, read, and think and talk about how to be better as parents. Not perfect parents, just better parents, by making an effort to learn what we can so that we will model the best way we can every opportunity we can. That's our goal. We're never going to be perfect, and if you expect to be a perfect parent, you're going to be let down. All we can do is do the best we can do in any situation. And be willing to admit when you did it wrong. Be willing to ask for forgiveness. You've shown your child it's okay to admit when you're wrong. One thing that I found is a lot of kids don't know how to apologize correctly. And that seems odd, but they only again, are little mirrors and sponges. They're only going to give back what they've seen. An apology is not just stopping and running by saying, I'm sorry, and going on with no discussion about that. A true apology is a complete sentence. I am sorry for knocking down your block tower. I am sorry for using unkind words and hurting your feelings when I said this. That was wrong of me. Can you forgive me? It's apologizing. I am sorry for the offense that you created, whether it was physical or verbal, and then asking for forgiveness. That is a true, full, complete apology. And most kids in a preschool age right now are learning, I'm sorry. And if I say those words, it justifies. All I have to do, that's like my get out of jail free card. I can do whatever I want to do as long as I run by and say, I'm sorry. And they don't learn how to say it. You know, look them in the eye. They'll just go, sorry. And I'm like, oh, no, no, no. We're going to stop. You're going to look at them. And a lot of times I'll get them to hold hands because if you're touching someone, you will look at that person. So I am sorry for whatever you said or did. It was wrong and unkind of me. Will you forgive me? That's a true apology. That needs to happen preschoolers, elementary, parent to child, spouse to spouse, parent to child in terms of y'all with your parents. You need to begin to role model coworkers, anything. Role model how to apologize to someone. That is huge for a child to see their parent to admit, I'm not perfect. I screwed it up. But I'm apologizing for it. And now I want to do better next time. You know, and that's biblical. That's what we're supposed to do. So just practice that. If you don't do that, and just saying, making your kid say I'm sorry is not a good thing. Don't ever make your kid say I'm sorry. Make him stand there until he says the words, because you didn't teach him the goal of empathy. You taught him to just say words. And that's not what that teachable moment was about. So get them to apologize. Maybe in a way, if they don't want to say the words, perhaps they want to give a hug, you know, or perhaps they want to help rebuild a block tower, or maybe they would like to write a note. There's many ways to apologize, but you need to get them to do something, to show empathy and to remorse, but really practice with your kiddos on how to apologize. And you're going to have to practice that by admitting when you mess up as a parent. Or when mom and dad mess up and someone, one of you came in and said something short to the other one and that hurt feelings. Let your kids see you apologize to each other. That's so important. Okay? Learn your family's rhythm. He talks in here about different rhythms in terms of music, rock and roll, classical, jazz, pop, and country. Learn whatever your rhythm of your family is. How does your family flow? We move. We're just fast movers. We go and we like to do a lot because we're all very busy. Or we like it a little slower. There's no wrong. There's no right. It's what your family is. So just understand what's good for your family. Take a step back. When you work through chapter 4 in this book, part 4, it's going to force you to together talk about some things. What's the foundation of our family? What is our vision of our family? What's our mission statement? What is our, you know, our purpose? So you talk through all of those things. And once those things are very clear and defined, it makes making decisions so much easier and helps you guys out. How to be a sharp parent, repeating the behaviors that you want. Time. Where's your time being spent? On your phone, at work, whether you're at home or not? What types of, what message are you sending to your kiddos? In terms of where your time is being given. The two types of parenting in terms of time that he talks about is the two extremes. Parenting, like you're trying to be your child's best friend. You don't need to be your child's best friend. God will give them a best friend. You're the parent. That's your role. Be the parent. And a lot of parents don't like to do that because they don't want them hurt. I always want them to like me. I don't want them to feel sad. You know what? They need to feel those things in order to feel the joy. They need to feel those things to learn the boundaries. They need to feel those things in order to learn what's right and wrong. So by not wanting your children hurt or sad, or no one likes it as a parent. Don't get me wrong. I don't love when my child is hurting. But when he's hurt a friend's feelings or he's done something wrong, he needs to have remorse about that. He needs to know that that's not okay going in the future. And so, you know, you don't want to be your child's friend, and I have to be the parent to teach them about that. And if I'm trying so hard to be the best friend, I can't be both a best friend and a parent. You can't. You can choose one job or the other. But if you want your children, if you want a great relationship with your children when they're adults, be the parent when they're little. You can be the friend later, okay? They'll grow into respect you. You'll have a great relationship. And those kind of things are going to happen later. But you have to be the parent when it's parenting time. The opposite of parenting is parenting. You use just the force and I'm going to make you do this. And you take all the choices away from their kids. You're going to join this club and you're going to be in this sport. You're going to play this position. And because I said so, because I want you to, because I think this will get you to the next level sports. And this is a scholarship and you're going to this college with this major. You just plan out their life and you didn't even get the kid an opportunity to participate. And powering, being a power parent really is so negative for both of you. He says in here, rules without relationship, which is just powering. You're going to do this because I say so. And not allowing them to have choice. Rules without relationship will lead to rebellion. You're basically defeating yourself. You're going to spend all the time arguing and telling them what they're doing. You've ruined the relationship because all you're doing is barking orders and acting like a drill sergeant. You have no relationship with them. What's the one thing they're going to do as fast as they can? They're going to get out of there. And that's not your goal. You want to have a relationship with your child. So be cautious to not be on either side. Neither one of these is the way you should parent. There should be in the middle. So don't be afraid to be the parent. There are a lot of parents in Frisco who are very afraid to be the parent. They want to be their friend. And that's just, it's not, neither one of them are healthy. So where do you spend your time? How to be a sharp parent. Where do you spend your time? Where do you, what skills do you use? In being a parent, God gave you a skill of organization. So you're good with your calendar. You use that wisely. Maybe that's not your strength. And so you need to schedule that. You need to practice that. Being patient, giving them the opportunity to practice on their own. It's so much easier for us to do things for them because we're better at it. We've had more practice. We get it done faster. Let them put those shoes on at age two. Let her brush her hair. It won't be perfect. It's okay. Let it go. It's not a reflection on you as a mama because her hair is not perfectly brushed. You just say, she brushed her hair today. Aren't you so proud of her? Every other adult will understand. Or these kids that come dressed in bathing suits, sweatpants, and tutus, and mom walks in with eyes like this, mortified. The kid has a smile, ear-to-ear grin. I got myself dressed today. I said, you look beautiful. I love that. I'm so proud of you. I can tell you spent some time picking those outfits, your outfit out today. I did. Do you know what? She may look like a complete goofball, but she's going to learn today, and she's going to be happy, and she is going to take in all kinds of good things today. Is she going to wear that when she gets to high school? No. She's three. She's wearing it now. It's okay. They're going to learn by positive peer pressure. I don't wear those things every day. We let the little stuff go. It doesn't matter. She's not going to go to kindergarten wearing tutus. And all this big, I mean, I'm not talking like the little cute ones that you wear for outfits. I'm talking like the big ones that just came out of the ballet performance last week. It's new. It's exciting for her. You let that kind of stuff go. Making their beds. Moms, this is a hard one for us. You want everything clean. You want everything perfect. You want everything done. It's a reflection of you, your house. Let it go. Let that little one make her bed. Let that little guy make his bed. If he gets the sheets pulled up and the comforter up and it is not perfect, ready for hospital corners with a drill sergeant to come flip a quarter on and like that, you're not the military. Let it go. Who cares? They did their best. You congratulate them for doing their best and you do not go behind them and fix it. That's hard. You do not go behind them and fix it. You accept they did their personal best. You can't accept and expect anything more than their personal best. Now, at age three, their personal best is age three personal best. Their best at age 13 is going to change. As they grow and mature and practice, things will improve. But if you don't give them a time and an opportunity to practice when they're little, they will have no desire to practice or do later. So schedule time for these little ones to practice zipping a jacket. Start 10 minutes early. If she wants to zip her coat, let her zip that coat. It may take 100 times, and you're like, don't let me do it. Don't. Walk away. Call me if you need some help, because you're sweating over here in the other room. Just zip the coat. But don't let her see that. Let her practice zipping that coat all by herself. It's not a big deal. She'll get it, and if she doesn't, she'll call you. Okay? But then you've come in at the help. Oh, you got to do this part right here, and then I'll show you how to do it, and you try it again. Give them time to practice so that that excitement about trying and learning is instilled when they're little so that they're willing to try and learn when they're older. If you do for them when they're little, and then at age 12, you're like, yeah, buddy, you're on your own now, man. You make your own lunch, do your own laundry kind of stuff. You're in middle school. I'm kind of checking out on this. You need to do everything yourself. You never taught them the skills. You can't expect them to do something you never taught them. So understand that they can only give you their personal best. That's all God ever asks of us, is our personal best. And we screw it up all the time. And he forgives us, and he loves us, and tomorrow's a brand new day. So don't expect any more out of your children than they can give. Know their age, know their limit, and if they're trying, let it go. Okay? Understanding that they're learning, understanding that they're practicing, understanding they aren't going to master all of this. Their brains are not fully developed until 26 years old. 26 years old. That's a lot of practice time. Now, you can expect it to improve greatly as they age, but no one is going to master this. You haven't mastered everything. You can't expect a child to master everything. And the way you do it is the way you do it. They're a different person. They're not you. Let it go. It's okay. So take some pressure off yourself. Take some animosity out of the home. And just let your kids do what they can do and be okay with that. Family routines worth repeating. Play together. Do puzzles. Do board games. Make up silly songs. Play charades. Go to the park together. Just be together. Anything that you can do. Reading together. Choose a book that you want to work on. Choose a Bible study that y'all want to do that's age appropriate. Whatever that you can do. Book time reading in the beginning of the year, went into school mode. Reading at night for a nighttime reading is invaluable. Number one, you're sitting close together, you're snuggling, you're reading, it's a routine for bed. Number two, you're helping those pre-emergent reading skills for school. So you're doing dual right there, and you may not even realize it, but it's so valuable to do that. Eating together, that allows manners at the table. Do I sit with my feet up in the chair? Well, if they're little, they might need to because they can't touch the floor and they don't feel safe. Or you've given them a booster chair to sit in. But forks are on the left. Spoons and knives are on the right. We put our napkin in our lap. You're modeling and teaching all of this because you're taking time to sit together and you're doing it. So it's very valuable. It's also open conversation. Eating is when you're having dinner time. Lunchtime at school is my favorite time because it's undirected conversation. It's whatever they say, and they say some crazy stuff that's just hilarious. But let that conversation happen. Let them talk about what's bothering them. Have a discussion about what went on at school today. And I grew up in a home that my dad wouldn't accept one word answer. How was school? Fine. No, that didn't work. And I don't do it for mine. I'm like, tell me something good about school today. I don't ask how was school. Tell me something good about school today. I got to come up with one good thing. And recess and lunch do not count. It never counted as an option for one good thing. They had to tell me one thing they learned, or one good thing that they worked out with a friend, or one good thing that, hey, I really studied for this test, and I just found out today I got a higher grade than I expected on it. That's a good thing. They saw fruits of their work. And then tell me one thing that you struggled with. You know, maybe you had a conversation with a friend today that didn't go the way you planned. You know, so talk about the good and the bad, because we have to learn how to handle the bad as well. So mom and dad time is very important. Let them see you all having that time together, talking together, you know, just visiting. When dad comes home from work, what happens? Or when you guys all come home together, let them see affection between you guys. You're teaching them how a family operates by just doing that, okay? And praying together. Meal times are an easy time that you can do that. But praying about when something's hard. Praying about when, you know, hey, what was a troubling thing to you today at school? Oh, my friend said this. Let's talk about that. And then you've had discussion about, let's pray that God gives you the right words or the courage to say the right thing tomorrow. Okay? And don't sweat the small stuff. Just don't sweat the small stuff. It's all going to pick your battles. You've kind of heard that. Pick your battles. It's very important to do that. But don't sweat the small stuff. Okay?